1890s, New York City was America's financial, manufacturing, and entertainment capital, and also its preferred destination for sin, teeming with 40,000 prostitutes, glittering casinos, and all-night dives packed into the island's 24 square miles. Police captains took hefty bribes to look the other way while reformers writhed in frustration. In the new book, Island of Vice, Theodore Roosevelt's doomed quest to clean up sin-loving New York, author Richard Zacks paints a vivid picture of the lewd underbelly of 1890s New York and of Roosevelt's crusading police commissioner who resolved to clean up the bustling metropolis where the silk top hats of Wall Street bobbed past teenage prostitutes who were trawling Broadway. It's a fascinating story told in Island of Vice, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Richard Zacks to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What brought you to this time and place?
Well, actually, I was trying to write my first historical novel and not getting too far with it, and I was researching the 1890s, and I stumbled on Roosevelt as police commissioner, which I had already known from The Alienist, and I knew the conventional wisdom that he came in and he reformed the city and he cleaned up the police department, and it seemed a fairly one-dimensional story, but I started going back to the newspapers, and it turned out that he had a really rough time, and it was a really good story of vice fighting against a crusading reformer, and basically vice coming out on top, ultimately. But
where does the story ultimately begin? Because we look at the 1890s as the decade, but for Roosevelt, where does the story begin?
Well, it begins in this part of his life, when he's appointed police commissioner. He's 6 years coming from D.C., having lived in D.C. and the civil service commissioner. And he comes into New York, and it's astounding. He's so idealistic and so passionate that he's going to clean up the police department. He's going to shut down the vast majority of the brothels. He's going to enforce all the laws, all the police conduct rules. And it's basically so utopian and so ambitious, and he never backs down from it. It's astounding. But, the city was just too big, too diverse, too tough. It wouldn't be reformed.
At what point do you get a sense that he has a handle on what the problems are, on the situation in total?
Well, it's pretty fascinating because at first he does incredibly well because the city has never seen, I mean, he's 5'8", 5'9", he's Harvard educated, and he stands up to these cops. And it just so happens that 2/3 of the force was Irish or Irish American, and a lot of them were big, beefy guys, a lot of them were undereducated, and they ruled the streets of New York. And the city at first was thrilled to have this police commissioner come in and stand up to them. And literally, he went around on midnight rambles, seeing if they were doing their job. And I would call it the honeymoon period, the first 6 weeks in office with all the pronouncements and all the excitement. Everything was going great, but then he decided that he would enforce the law against saloons being open on Sundays. And that just was the start of the downfall and the start of all the problems for him.
You talked about the rambles, but he would take about a dozen after midnight rambles to catch cops who were on the night shift, who were sleeping or talking when they should be on duty. And this was something that really bothered him because this was a police force that was extremely corrupt, especially at the rank of captain, and he wanted to make things better.
He really did, and he went out with Jacob Riis, you know, who's famous for How the Other Half Lives, the great photo muckraking book on poverty in New York City. And Riis at the time was also the crime editor, the police beat editor for the Evening Sun. So he really, really knew the city well. So Roosevelt and Riis met up around midnight and started walking the blocks. And the biggest problem they had at first is they couldn't find any cops at all walking their beats. So then when Roosevelt finally found a few, they were either resting or they were talking to streetwalkers, or Roosevelt didn't find any cops really doing their duty. So he stood up to them and he lectured them and he ordered them to appear at police headquarters the following morning. And I don't think Roosevelt did it as a publicity stunt. I think he just did it to find out what was really happening with his police force. And I think Riis might have suggested it even. And it turned out to be the most wonderful publicity for Theodore Roosevelt. The whole country's imagination was caught by the idea of this aristocratic police commissioner willing to walk the streets of New York at midnight. And he wound up taking, almost call them slum tours. He would take different people that came to visit, you know, during the dozen or so midnight rambles and take them around and show them the sights.
In showing the sights and seeing the cops, would any of those cops be fired?
Some eventually would be, yes. There was all kinds of technicalities about whether he could bring charges against them, and then he eventually started bringing a roundsman with him, which was it's pretty much the rank of sergeant today, but it was one rank above patrolman, and these were the guys overseeing the lowest rank, and he wound up bringing a roundsman with him to bring the charges. But no, Roosevelt inflicted much stricter discipline upon the police force. For instance, in the old days, if a guy got caught drinking in uniform, he might get like a 3-day suspension or 5-day suspension or something like that. Roosevelt wanted him thrown off the police force. This was just, he wound up tossing two brothers, Frank and Edward Hahn. One of them was caught drinking in uniform. The other one was a co-owner of a brothel on Eldridge Street. And Roosevelt helped a little bit with the investigation that led to that dismissal.
When you read the book, you have the idea that pretty much everything is going wrong, right? I mean, there's the drinking, there's the gambling, there's the corruption in the police department, there's prostitutes, there's scandal, but a lot of this bleeds into one another, right?
Well, yeah, and I think it's the question of whether you want to call it wrong. I mean, the appetite of the city was for that kind of entertainment. I mean, let's be frank. They wanted gambling, they wanted prostitution, they wanted saloons open on Sundays, they wanted all-night clubs. So from the point of view of the citizen, all those things were okay, and all of, they were facilitated by a small bribe to the police force. And I think the city, by voting Tammany Hall back in soon after Roosevelt's arrival, they were telling loud and clear, we want a corrupt city, basically. That was their announcement. So, but from Roosevelt's point of view, yes, things were going badly, and he was very frustrated. He succeeded in some of the tasks that he tried. I mean, he held one of the fairest elections. The police then oversaw the elections directly, and he managed to have an extremely fair election. And he really had a great system for it. And some of the things he tried to do, he certainly succeeded at. But overall, vice won out.
As you mentioned, the subtitle of the book is Theodore Roosevelt's Doomed Quest to Clean Up Sin-Loving New York. At what point do you think he realized that his quest was doomed?
I think he realized it when the Raines Law Hotels came in. I should explain what they are a little bit. It was supposed to be a law that was going to raise the liquor tax and crack down on Sunday drinking, but it had a clause in it that said if you ran a hotel and you had 10 or more rooms, you could serve people around the clock, 24/7. You could serve them alcohol with a meal. So it seems like a small little technicality, but when the law passed in 1896, more than 1,000 New York saloons converted over to Raines Law Hotels. So all of a sudden, the city, which was supposed to shut down its drinking at 1 a.m., now it had more than 1,000 places with 10 bedrooms that could serve liquor all night long. And it really corrupted the city. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And that happened right in the middle. Roosevelt had been in office basically a year when the Raines Law kicked in. And I think that's when he realized how incredibly frustrating the whole thing was going to be. And he started working very, very hard for the McKinley campaign, just as a campaigner, you know. And some of his friends started lobbying McKinley to try and get Roosevelt a position in the administration. So the idea was he was looking for a way out pretty much 1 year after he arrived.
Were his motives always pure?
You know, I think they were for the most part. I am astounded by, there's no hypocrisy there. I mean, he drank one glass of white wine, possibly two occasionally. He was not a drinker. He wasn't, he certainly wasn't running around on his wife. He was very consistent. I think there was very little hypocrisy. And the only thing you could accuse him maybe a little of political ambition was with the saloon crackdown. I think he thought a fringe benefit was going to be the saloons were where Tammany Hall organized their political, election day and a lot of their politics. So I think he did think in the back of his mind, if I shut down 2,000 of these saloons, Tammany Hall will be hurt. It wound up playing out the exact opposite way, but I think that was in the back of his mind.
How did things ultimately end up getting cleaned up?
It took a long time. I mean, the Raines Law Hotels were in effect through 1917. So you had 20 more years of that. And then New York became, you know, incredibly corrupt during Prohibition with all the gangsters.
Yeah.
I'd say, you know, LaGuardia and Giuliani and now Bloomberg. I mean, there's been, we kind of have, I don't know what you want to call it, eruptions of virtue or whatever. you know, they think the city rocks back and forth. Just to know how much the city's changed, this is a true story. I got a call from my son about a year ago. He's 17 years old, and we didn't know where he was. And he said, "Dad, don't worry about me. I'm in Times Square." And from when I grew up, the idea of saying you're in Times Square and that you're safe is just insane. I mean, there were streetwalkers, there was pornography. It was a very dicey area. And now it's pretty much of Broadway theaters and almost like a glorified mall. So he's safe. He's in Times Square.
Do you think there are any examples of crackdowns and successes that we've had today that are a direct result of the policies put in by Theodore Roosevelt during his time as police commissioner?
Well, it certainly headed us towards fairer elections. He was successful on that. I think it might have convinced people for quite a while that New York couldn't be saved. You know, I'm not sure that was his intention. And New York does sometimes feel like a different, I mean, it's so international as opposed to, you know, homogenous. He did bring back the 2-foot-long, thick nightstick that had been, they thought it was too fearsome a weapon, and the previous police chief had banned it, and Roosevelt brought it back when a police officer got injured in a fight, and that lasted for a full century. And you could argue that, you know, Roosevelt bringing it back, I mean, that was, they also shut down the homeless shelters in the basement of police stations during Roosevelt's tenure, and those didn't come back. So, I mean, certain things like that.
And now we think of a sin city being Las Vegas, as opposed to New York as an island of vice.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas, with all due respect, I won't call it a Bible camp compared to New York in the 1890s, but close. I mean, what you have to realize is, sure, there's gambling in Vegas, but that's legal.
Right.
And there's prostitution in the neighboring counties, and that's legal. This was all illegal, and there was just a sense of anything was for sale, you know, and unfortunately, you know, I mean, there was a lot of exploitation, and I mean, there were opium dens and casinos. There were bookie parlors in the backs of hotels, second floor bars. There was illegal numbers games. I mean, a lot of these things we've legalized nowadays, but those were all illegal, and there was a city full of that.
The name of the book is Island of Vice, Theodore Roosevelt's Doomed Quest to Clean Up Sin-Loving New York. The book is published by Doubleday. Richard Zacks, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
Hey, thanks a lot. It was great.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Island of Vice. It's published by Doubleday. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.